You can walk into a synagogue on a Friday night or Saturday morning when services are happening, including prayers that do say, Baruch Atah Adonai. They're talking about God. And if you ask people why they're there afterwards, most of them actually will not say that they're there to relate to God. They're there for a set of other things that I would argue are deeply holy. They're there because of a commitment to what is often talked about as Jewish community or the Jewish people.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Today on In Good Faith, I'm so pleased to be speaking with Lex Rofberg and Dan Liebenson. Coming to me, Dan from Chicago and Lex from?
Divine Providence, Rhode Island. Providence, Rhode Island.
Providence, Rhode Island. Great. Lex is the senior Jewish educator for Judaism Unbound, a digital Jewish nonprofit organization, and oversees Judaism Unbound's An Yeshiva, a digital center for Jewish learning and unlearning. And for our non-Jewish listeners, there's a play on words here. A yeshiva is a school for Jewish learning, and Lex and Dan have made an un-yeshiva. Dan Liebenson is president of Lippman Kanfer Foundation for Living Torah, which is dedicated to helping Jews and fellow travelers apply Jewish wisdom to thrive and shape a better world. He's also the co-host of the Judaism Unbound podcast. Gentlemen, Judaism Unbound. I mean, there is the whole Old Testament story of let my people go. There's that Unbound. But talk to me, maybe Lex, about coming up with that title and what it means to you.
Amazing. I love that you brought up the let my people go kind of unbound, the sense of like being enslaved, being bound in that way. Often when we talk about the word and people flash to the Bible, flash to the Torah, the first thing that comes to mind is Isaac, like the binding of Isaac, unbound. And he gets unbound at the end of the story, thank goodness. But that's a connection that's less common that we also hold very dear. What's funny about the name Judaism Unbound is we came up with it thoughtfully, and we did have some ideas about what it stood for, and I'll get to some of those. But over the years, we've sort of retrojected a bunch of other deep meanings that we weren't conscious of at the beginning. We live in a contemporary Jewish universe, society, with a lot of different kinds of Jewish people, a lot of different kinds of Jews. And there's a disconnect between what people talk about as quote-unquote Judaism, as like official Judaism, and what most Jews actually do, and what most Jews actually believe and think and practice. And we spend a lot of time trying to convince Jews who might call themselves, you know, not really Jewish or bad Jews, I don't really go to synagogue, I don't really do all the stuff, I don't believe all the stuff. Like, no, you're actually doing great. You're actually absolutely living Jewish lives. And the reason we use the framework of unbound is that we want people to feel an increased sense of permission, an increased sense of freedom to define Judaism in the ways that fit their lives.
Like, I actually was having a conversation not too long ago with somebody who's very focused on Jewish grandparents and how could they sort of influence their grandchildren to be more connected to being Jewish. And I said to this person, I think the best way to do that is to help the grandparents start to love Judaism and not just feel a sentimental attachment and just not to feel guilt about not having passed it on, to help the grandparents see that it's an amazing thing, which they don't yet know. These are just people who have ended up feeling guilty that they didn't raise their families connected enough. And I said, if these grandparents truly loved Judaism, their grandchildren would love Judaism as well.
So there are a lot of people whose Jewish life is very rich and deep and might not take the form of participating in classic kinds of Jewish mainstream institutions like synagogues or Jewish community centers, Jewish federations, different kinds of gathering spaces. And they still really do care about being Jewish, and the flow of the holidays matters to them. Maybe there are some holidays they care more about than others. Maybe there are stories that they connect to Jewishly. Maybe, or maybe not, God plays a key role. There's actually a lot of Jews who think of themselves as Jewish atheists, but still think of themselves as Jewish. And we find that they're often drawn to us because we're all about celebrating the myriad different ways that folks can define Judaism and increasingly how we can create new forms of Judaism. That's another piece of Unbound, is that we're not only bound to the ways things have been.
You did a beautiful job describing different kinds of Jewish people. And I think it's so important not to assume that any religious group is a monolith, that the individual practitioners are all different, and we should talk to them without assuming we know all about them and their beliefs. When I take people to Israel, for instance, on tours, halfway through the trip, people are still bending their minds around the idea that not all these Jewish people are religious or practicing. So my job now is to follow up with what you've just explained and taught me and ask you about the traditions you grew up with as far as faith is concerned. Why don't you start, Dan?
You could tell the story that in my family, the family business is Judaism. My grandmother was a Jewish educator for many years, and my dad became a rabbi. And eventually we moved to Israel when I was 14, and I ended up, for sort of complex reasons, we weren't Orthodox when we were in the U.S. My dad was a conservative rabbi, which is kind of a deep cut into the Jewish denominational world because conservative is actually liberal, but the more conservative end of liberal. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But when we came to Israel, my dad imagined that in Israel, everybody was either religious or secular. And so since we were obviously not secular, we must be religious. And that ended up putting my sisters and me into this Orthodox school system in Israel, which was not something that we had fully been prepared for. And I experienced all that pretty negatively. Like, I didn't actually like being a rabbi's son when we were living in America, and I did not want to move to Israel at that time and leave all my friends and everything that I knew. And I certainly was not prepared for, nor did I have any intrinsic desire to be in a much more Orthodox environment than I had ever experienced before. And so in a lot of ways, that experience turned me off of Judaism. And I don't know exactly what would have happened in my story had I not read a book my senior year of high school called Who Wrote the Bible, which was a book from the world of academia, an academic Bible scholarship. And it was talking about how the author or authors of the Bible were not God. They were people that had various political and other issues with one another, and they had to reconcile their stories at different points. And to me, that was so exciting. That gave me something that I could believe in, as opposed to all these things that I didn't really believe in. And in a way that I wouldn't have talked about at that time, and I don't know that I really talk about it this time, but for this podcast, I will. That was a new form of faith for me. It felt like something that I could believe in, something that I could build a life around. And because, though, I had this incredible Jewish education from my time as a rabbi's kid and in all these Jewish schools for my whole life, I had a lot of specific Jewish knowledge that I was able to put together in new ways now with a new lens that I had. And that was just the beginning. I mean, that was what kept me in the game. And that's, by the way, what I think sometimes when we're talking to more traditional folks and saying, like, look, I've actually become, I wouldn't say more traditional, but I've become much more open to more traditional Jewish ideas than I ever would have had I not taken that detour into a less religiously focused version of Judaism through reading biblical scholarship, right? And so you can say those books are scary, those books might make people lose their faith, but actually for me, it was the thing that allowed me to begin a journey toward a lifetime of connection. And so ultimately, what I felt and feel my purpose is, my calling, so to speak, is to offer pathways into Judaism for people like me, whether they grew up with a traditional background or without one, meaning people for whom the traditional story is not working, and that there are ways that those folks can develop a path for themselves or follow paths by others, but they're going to have to be newly imagined paths that I think a lot of traditional folks feel afraid of.
Lex, how about you?
I got to college, and I was like a lot of American Jews in that I really loved being Jewish. I had grown up connected to many Jewish organizations, but like largely organizations about social interaction, Jewish youth group, Jewish summer camp, places where being Jewish was important, but where like deep Jewish learning, connection to our tapestry of holidays and texts, it was part of it, but I didn't feel like I knew enough. I felt like I was not enough, not Jewish enough. It's a term that comes up over and over again as people explore their relationship to Judaism. But I actually did have a deep Jewish upbringing. I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Both my parents are Jewish, both of whom cared very much about Judaism, but not in ways that were super legible to a lot of non-Jews. So my mom grew up in the Catskills in New York, in an area that is actually kind of notable and almost famous to Jewish history.
The Borscht Belt?
Yes, she grew up in the Borscht Belt, and her father, my grandfather, was the pharmacist in a small town in the Catskills, which meant when you run the drugstore, you kind of know everybody. And she was in a hyper-Jewish area of the world, but almost all of the Jews in her orbit were very secularist. They were not approaching their Judaism through the prism of God belief, but they were actually very deeply invested in the flow of time. You know, my mom had like 50 people in their kind of small house for Passover. They just wind the table through the room. They just like set up whatever situation they could, but they weren't like talking about the story of Passover all that much, which I actually love that story. And now my mom's Passover Seder is more connected to that. But they had a social relationship to Jews, to Jewishness, even to things like Jewish comedy that were big in that area, Jewish culture, Yiddishism, and it wasn't grounded in like religion so much. And I inherited that. And so I grew up with a lot of Jewish culture. We had posters on my wall of Mel Brooks, of Barbra Streisand. Like, I didn't even think much about this. These were like hero figures in my life, like these notable Jews in film and music and TV. My dad has like a reverential relationship to the lineage of Jewish pop culture. Hollywood, of course, being like a largely Jewish kind of creation, but like I had all of that and I experienced that as a daily part of my life. But I couldn't have told you what books were in the Torah. I couldn't have told you who various characters were, what the Talmud was. But I arrived in college wanting to know that. And so I felt like I needed to do that learning. And then once I did, the first step was like, oh, I actually want to unlearn that I was in a problematic space in the first place. I want to help celebrate the Jewishness that I did have, because so many people are taught that that's insufficient in the ways I was.
Both of you, very interesting journeys, and especially considering your destination, at least at present, where you are on the path. And I'm wondering, as far as Judaism Unbound, I'm guessing maybe you have people who come to it and say, wait, this is far more academic or analytic than, you know, I was here to worship. And others who may come and say, wait, you keep bringing religion into this. What is your balance? Do you seek for something, or is it just you are yourselves and whatever comes out is what the podcast is?
First off, I think fewer people than you'd expect come to a podcast called Judaism Unbound expecting something that they might describe with the word worship. Honestly, I very rarely hear the word worship in Jewish spaces. And even the word faith, I think the word faith is productive and rich. I also don't hear it very much in Jewish spaces because, and that's not to say there isn't theology that's Jewish. There isn't thousands of years of discussions of what God is, who God is, how we relate to God, how we don't. It's just that it's not the core axis of what a lot of Jews are doing. I mean, if we went to some terminology from religious studies, there's like orthodoxy and orthopraxis, like right belief and right practice. And Judaism historically and today has much more grounded itself in what one does, what one eats, what one says, what one does when they wake up, what one does when they go to bed, than what one thinks as they're doing those things. So the idea of worship or of how you think about God, I actually kind of wish it was more what some Jews wanted to do. I think that's a fascinating set of things to delve into, but that's not what a lot of people come to.
Well, you know, that really is an important point. You talk about right belief and right action or practice. And in different religious organizations or traditions, one or the other of those can be more important. For instance, do you say the creed? If so, you say this creed, then you have the right belief and you are one of us. Others, it might be, do you do the things that we do? And that becomes the test of, do you belong? Are you, quote, a real member of the community?
That like collision of things we see as either Jewish culture or secularism with the things we call traditional or religious, that's the magic. Like what Dan described with Who Wrote the Bible, I had a very similar experience when I encountered Jewish studies, when I encountered academia, all of a sudden, like, these things that I was taught as very simplistic, a bunch of things happened a few thousand years ago, and they were written down in a text called the Torah and then the further books of the Bible. I actually find that less interesting and less compelling than, wow, a set of people, different people with different ideas, consciously created literature that could engage a society, that could open up debates about how we should be as human beings, that could ask big questions about what we want to be in the world and what we want to do. That's more exciting. I more want to be a part of a group of people that is heir to that tradition than I want to be part of a group of people that, like, lived a bunch of events and wrote them down. So I'm excited that we can blur those lines and bring things that feel like academia or cultural Judaism or whatever. Like, it's very common that we might talk about a Jackie Mason or a Barbara Streisand or a Mel Brooks, and then 2 minutes later, we're in the book of Genesis or the book of Kings. Like, that's our go-to. And I find that that actually really revs people up. They don't want either or. They've been taught they need to pick, but they actually want a full cohesive way in which different kinds of Jewish stories, cultural, religious, et cetera, are in conversation with each other.
I'm sure you know the term holy envy from Christopher Stendahl about allowing...
This came up yesterday in a conversation I had with someone, with Vanessa Oakes, a dear friend of our show.
So I have some. In particular, this whole aspect, but I think there's this rich Jewish tradition, here's my holy envy, that you get to wrestle with each other's ideas and wrestle with God, that that's a good thing and actually encouraged. How has that wrestle influenced your own spiritual life or intellectual life?
Well, first of all, I appreciate being the object of holy envy. The way you just described it, Steve, is a beautiful description of what the Jewish tradition really is. But like all traditions, there are orthodoxies that emerge. I mean, I'll tell you a joke. There's a story about a synagogue that was arguing about whether or not people should stand or sit for a particular really important prayer called the Shema. And they were fighting about it, and they were saying, we're going to, you know, have to break off and create two different synagogues. And finally, somebody says, if we could find a member of the synagogue that would tell us what the original practice of this synagogue was, we would all agree to abide by that. And they said, yes, we would agree to that. So they fly down to Florida to find the oldest living member of the synagogue, who's now in a retirement home. And they go to him and they say, you know, Mr. Goldberg, can you tell us if it was the tradition of our synagogue to stand for the Shema prayer? And he thinks about it for a second and he says, no, that was not the tradition. And then they say, okay, so Mr. Goldberg, it was the tradition then to sit during the Shema prayer. And he says, no, that was not the tradition. And they said, but Mr. Goldberg, this is absolutely tearing our synagogue apart. We're coming to blows. We're arguing about whether or not to split off and become two different synagogues. And he says, that was the tradition. And I think that, to me, that sounds like a great tradition. You know, to me, that sounds like, wow, we are the heirs to a tradition of constantly grappling with who we are. But that is not what a lot of people want. There are a lot of people who say, I just want to know what it is. And in that sense, we're not against those people. I just think that we represent two different approaches to Judaism. And I remember my dad saying to me early on in the story of the podcast, and keep in mind, he is a rabbi, and he said, I think that you're kind of popping out because you're questioning all these orthodoxies and you're giving opportunities for all these people to talk about what Judaism is not, but you're not really offering an alternative about what Judaism is or should be. And I said to him at that time, I don't see that as my role. I see my role as making available to people, knowing that there are different options out there, and then people have to decide for themselves. And I'm not offering an option. I'm offering a relationship where you can explore many options. And he didn't really like that at the time. And the truth is that as we've gone over the years, I've felt more and more that I'm starting to have a bit more of a sense of what the option is that I personally like. And there are ways in which I'm excited about offering that, but that's different from the mission of Judaism Unbound, partly because that may not be the strength of a podcast, And so I think the question about, you know, how things change over the course of a person's life or how things change over the course of an organization's life are really interesting ones. But I do think that there's always this value. And I think in a really deep way, this is what Judaism Unbound is about. This is why we call the Un Yeshiva a center for learning and unlearning, because the first step is to unlearn a lot of assumptions about what you think it has to be. And for me, one of the most powerful definitions of unbound is the idea that a lot of people feel like they're Jewish basically because they have to be, whether that's because God told them that they have to be or because anti-Semitism forced them to be Jewish. And we're saying, no, we want to have a Jewish future that's opt-in, that people are being Jewish because they want to be. And in order to do that, we first have to break down a set of assumptions about what it has to be. And then we have to open the door for all kinds of people to offer lots of alternative visions and let people explore those.
I love what you said about assumptions. One of my questions is, what shouldn't we, as people who aren't Jewish, what shouldn't we assume about our Jewish neighbors? You've described some of it by just saying, for instance, I shouldn't assume everyone's Orthodox or practicing in some particular way.
I really appreciate that question. First off, we live in a world where being not Jewish and relating to Judaism is hard. And I think it's made hard by the Jewish community and by folks outside of it. Like, you know, people are very nervous. Am I going to say the wrong thing about Israel? Am I going to say the wrong thing about Orthodox Jews? Am I going to cross a boundary? Like, I'd rather you engage in conversation about Judaism, connect to Jews, and stumble here and there than avoid it entirely. And I actually think a lot of non-Jews have been taught that it's better to avoid the conversation entirely and not mess up than to do it. But so here's an actual set of answers is Orthodox Judaism is more legible to folks outside of Jewish practice Judaism than is non-Orthodox Judaism. I think there's just like an illegibility to forms of deep, passionate Jewish community and practice that don't revolve around commitment to God. And that's actually most forms of Jewish practice globally. And in the US, certainly, you can walk into a synagogue on a Friday night or Saturday morning when services are happening, including prayers that do say, Baruch Atah Adonai, they're talking about God. And if you ask people why they're there afterwards, most of them actually will not say that they're there to relate to God. They're there for a set of other things that I would argue are deeply holy. They're there because of a commitment to what is often talked about as Jewish community or the Jewish people. There's problematic sides of that too. There's tribalism. There's ways in which there is a danger of Jewish peoplehood or Jewish community blurring into Jewish supremacy. I strive to avoid that. Many people strive to avoid that, but there is like a connection to holiness through relationship to people and not only relationship to God that I think is sometimes confusing to folks outside of Judaism. Like the idea that one would have a personal relationship to God. They tend to be more preoccupied with like being part of community, collective, tribe, family. These are all words that come up a lot. Civilization. So that's one thing I'd say is like, if you meet somebody who says they're Jewish and they don't believe in God, I think sometimes the takeaway is, oh, that's somebody who's not really a practicing Jew. And I would say that is often not true. They're actually committed to a lot of things that might be talked about as religious, which aren't God. So that's one thing I'd bring in, because we live in a country that conflates the word religion with conversations about God, with relationships to God. And God is a piece of Jewish tradition, but it's actually not first, second, or third for a lot of Jews, even Orthodox Jews sometimes.
As you're talking, Lex, I'm thinking about the resorts in the Catskills. And I'm thinking, like, when you go to a resort in the Catskills, there was a kind of a restaurant where you could get unlimited food. It was all inclusive, you know, so you could just get as much as you want. But there were also like shows at night, comedians, and there was also a hotel where you could sleep for the night. And so compare a resort at the Catskills to a restaurant. In other words, there's a restaurant in the resort, but the resort is not a restaurant. And in a way, I think that Judaism is just a bigger category than religion. Religion is part of Judaism, but not everybody goes to that. Like, there were people who went to the resort in the Catskills and never went to eat. You know, they only came for the shows, and they would go out to a restaurant outside the resort to eat, right? And so I think that if we can sort of think about Judaism as something larger than religion, meaning not more important than religion, but something that's a category that's larger. Christianity is a religion. Judaism is more of a culture, a civilization, that religion is one part of it. And that, I think, is a really important thing for folks to understand and wrap their heads around. By the way, not only non-Jews. I think a lot of Jews think about it as a religion in that way. And I, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I'd say we're against, right? We want to make it clear to Jews that if you aren't religious, you're not a bad Jew. You're a different kind of Jew.
Thanks to Lex Ruffberg and Dan Liebenson from Judaism Unbound for speaking with me today.
This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Ebert, Katerina Martinich, Soraya Pearson, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production team includes DJ Cromarty, Gracie Davis, Mark Anson, and Lawrence Sandberg. Spread the word about In Good Faith by leaving a comment and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. We think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. Our YouTube page is youtube.com/in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join us again soon, right here, In Good Faith.
Hi, Stephen Cap Perry here, host of In Good Faith. Here's another podcast from our BYU Radio family of podcasts I hope you'll check out. What I Love is Real. You know that saying, real recognize real? That's Lisa on The Lisa Show. Lisa Valentine Clark is a comedian, she's a believer, a single mother, and on The Lisa Show podcast, you'll hear from the Council of Moms, a genius idea, which is actually one of my favorite parts of her show. And you'll hear about the challenges of life, parenting, mental health questions, social issues. Yes, you'll hear from experts, but also from people discussing their where the rubber meets the road life experience. It's The Lisa Show, wherever you get your podcasts.